you're getting a view into the locker room that you don't normally see.
You're getting a sanitized view.
Not a natural scorer,
to be honest opinion. He's not doing the job that they hired him to do.
I just disagree.
Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Dano goes after it now for Stafford. Cross ice pass for Buffett. Winds up, shoots, deflected in front. They score! Dustin Buffett with a slap shot from the point. It might have been deflected off a shark, but the Winnipeg Jets have taken the lead with 10 seconds remaining. It's 5-4 Winnipeg.
And with that goal by Jets defenseman Dustin Byfuglien via the stick of Sharks defenseman Brent Burns, I guess it's better late than never, boys, but the Winnipeg Jets finally won 3 games in a row this season. That occurred early Friday morning, I suppose late Thursday night if you want to look at it that way too. The Jets go into San Jose and defeat the Sharks by that 5-4 margin. Alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. You can reach us in studio at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/illegalcurve, and of course our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is illegalcurve.com. Gentlemen, good morning to you both, first of all. And
what's going on, Drew?
Well, we're going to talk some hockey for 3 hours. What's going on with you, Ez?
Yeah, I'm pumped up about that. It's okay. Always my favorite part of the week.
Yeah, that's good.
Aside from the 7 lunches I have throughout the week, it's always my favorite part of the week.
Okay, good to know. I got nothing to follow up with that. Anyways, the Jets win 3 in a row as they finish their season with this 3-game road trip into California. They take care of business Tuesday against the Anaheim Ducks, coming back late and then winning in overtime, and then a Thursday night game, an entertaining contest, a 5-4 victory over the San Jose Sharks.
You stayed up the whole game, Drew?
I stayed up the whole game. Aren't you proud of me?
Yes.
I didn't stay up the whole game on Tuesday, though. I got to tell you, that was a catch the highlights on Wednesday morning sort of night. But you were doing the game with Rick, were you not?
I was, yeah.
Yeah, so you were burning the midnight oil on Thursday as well. But, you know, a 5-4 victory for the Jets. Obviously these games are meaningless, but it's nice to see, I guess, that the team is continuing to play well and continuing to put out a professional effort night in, night out. I sort of figured this week would go, after they beat the Wild on last Sunday at home, I sort of thought this week would go, okay, they ended the season at home on a high note. I thought they would sort of play out the string these last 3 games relatively meekly. But I was certainly wrong about that, as they take two victories in 2 very difficult cities to play again.
Yeah, and especially the game on Thursday night against the San Jose Sharks was an extremely exciting game, in my opinion, if you were able to stay up. Rich, I know Richie was, because he was doing the pre- and post-game show with Rick. But when you talk about these 3 games, of course they don't mean a lot in the standings for the Jets, because they've been mathematically eliminated for a long time. And even before they were mathematically eliminated, they've been out of the playoff picture for a couple of months now. But you have to be happy if you're a fan the way they're playing. And I know there are a large group of fans out there that aren't happy with the wins and how it impacts the draft position in the draft lottery, meaning that the Jets are now, I believe, 6th or 7th last in the NHL, and, yeah, and they're decreasing the odds of getting the first overall pick. But look at the way Blake Wheeler, Mark Scheifele, and Dustin Byfuglien are playing at the end of the season. And I think that does have an impact going forward. If the Jets just kind of died quietly into the night here at the end of the season, I don't think you're going to be happy as a team or really feeling good about yourselves. And you can't really say that the results at the end of this season have an impact on next year. Because as soon as the season ends, Rich, they pack up their bags and the season's over. It doesn't have a lot of an impact. But I think you would rather, as a fan and let alone the team, you would rather finish the season strong. So I think if you're a Jets fan, you should be happy with the way the team's playing. You should be happy with the fact that Mark Scheifele can get his 30th goal tonight, the fact that Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele are both on long point streaks, mm-hmm, the fact that Dustin Byfuglien is playing some of his best hockey of his career right now, even though the games might not mean much. I don't think winning is ever a bad thing. And again, I know there's going to be a lot of fans listening out there that think that, you know, I'm crazy because all it means is getting a lower draft pick. But these guys, we've talked about this for the last 2 or 3 weeks. Hockey players are born and bred to win hockey games. So they're going to go out there and they're going to try to win. So when the game is close, don't be surprised tonight, again, if the Jets are trying to win. Because they're never going to just, you know, die quietly into the night and not try out and try to go out and win. So, yeah, it doesn't mean that the Jets, at the end of the day, might get a lower draft pick. Maybe. But they're finishing the season strong. And I think that should be looked at as a positive thing.
Lucky for the Jets, if you want them to lose tonight. Now, truthfully, all that matters is Calgary and Winnipeg are the only two teams that can swap now in terms of the position. So they're fifth worst or they're sixth worst. So that percentage, I believe, is 8.5% or 7.5%.
That's correct.
So it's 1%. So just keep that in mind in terms of tonight. They're playing an LA team that's 2 points ahead of Anaheim. Anaheim has a game in hand. So if LA wins, they have the tiebreaker, they win the division. That means they avoid San Jose but play Nashville. I'm not sure that's a good thing or a bad thing, but that's what would happen. So they have something to play for. The Los Angeles Kings. In terms of the Jets, yeah, Byfuglien and Wheeler played well, as he mentioned. I don't read much into that because they're veterans, I guess, save and except for the fact that might play into a captaincy issue next year. Mark Scheifele playing really well at the end of the season and certainly progressing this season. You can read into that more and how well he's played. It's certainly exceeded my expectations. I've said that in the show numerous times. So that's something to be encouraged by. But overall, yeah, these games are meaningless, and if the Jets luck out in the lottery, then you won't remember this, and if they don't, then you might blame it.
Sure. I mean, if the worst case scenario happens and they drop from, you know, sixth from drafting sixth overall, if, you know, the lottery went according to, you know, to standings, to ninth overall, if,
well, but
you know,
it wouldn't, that would only happen if three teams behind them jumped.
Of course, it would be unbelievably rare for that to happen, but they could drop, you know, one spot to, from sixth to seventh or something else,
or it could go to one, two, or three.
Sure.
And Drew, we're obviously trying to be glass half full here on the show, right? I mean, it's been a disappointing season. You can't beat a dead horse with that. But I think it does bode well for next season that the Jets are going down fighting. Would you rather the Jets go down fighting, or would you like them just to, you know, lay down, you know, lay the king down like you do in chess, right? Like,
I don't know how to play chess.
Well,
really?
We'll play chess sometime.
I don't know how to play chess.
When you've accepted defeat in chess, you put
I understood the reference. I was just saying I don't know how to play chess. It was one of those games I never learned.
Well,
really?
Mm-hmm. Do you know how to play chess?
Yeah.
Mm. You're more strategic than I am in general, though.
I don't know, but I thought everybody knew how to play chess. No. Rory, you know how to play chess? Rory knows how to play chess.
Yeah, no. Bad parenting is really what I'm going to blame my parents for.
Yes, you know how to play chess.
Drew's more of a Yahtzee guy.
Well, we're playing chess, and Drew's playing checkers.
That's true.
Explains a lot.
Yeah, exactly. I do like Yahtzee, but that's a separate issue.
And again, too, Drew, it's not like the San Jose Sharks.
I thought you were going to get into like a chess.
No, it's Thursday night. It wasn't like the San Jose Sharks weren't dressing their top players.
Right, but they were very limited. Like, they could have hopped to second, but it was very limited.
The Sharks didn't really have anything. They're pretty much locked into third, but the Ducks on Tuesday had
fair.
A lot to play with and you know, had the game, you know, had a 1-0 lead late in the game, and this is a Winnipeg Jets team that hasn't excelled at coming back.
I'm not saying the players think about this because we were talking about how the players play hard. I actually think Anaheim's matchup is better against San Jose than Nashville.
I'm just saying, Richie, I think you got to give the Jets credit here. Yes, we're going to talk.
Yeah, no, they're playing hard.
Right, and you got to give them credit for that because Brent Burns was still in the lineup. Joe Pavelski was still in the lineup. Joe Thornton was still in the lineup. Yeah. Patrick Marleau was still in the lineup. The top players were still in the lineup, so you got to give the Jets credit for going in there and winning a game that many people didn't think they had a chance at winning.
I want to play Paul Maurice's post-game audio, a snippet of it from Thursday night, because, you know, I was a little bit surprised by his comments, because Maurice is generally a guy who, I think, when he has the opportunity to really put a positive spin on something and maybe pump up his players' tires, he usually takes that opportunity. On Thursday, I found that he didn't necessarily do that with his post-game comments.
Is there a sense of relief to get that 3-game winning streak?
No, I don't know that it's relief. We wouldn't have talked about it. These games aren't a whole lot of fun to play. I appreciate the leadership in the room and appreciate them coming out and competing and working. The games don't tell you a whole lot about where you're at as a team. You can watch some individuals right now. But I really, because this is a tough situation for everybody. I think they've worked hard. I don't think we're necessarily playing any better than we were a month and a half ago, to be honest with you. I think the teams that we're playing right now don't have any meat on the bone for these games, and you're not seeing their A game. But But we got a certain set of circumstances every day you come there. Right now we're out of the playoffs. Got a bunch of young guys in our lineup. We can go out and play hard and play for each other, or we can point fingers at each other and pout all night. We play hard. They're competing hard. That's all you can ask them to do.
You know, I appreciate Paul Maurice's honesty there, but I was a little bit surprised by it. You know, like I said, he usually takes an opportunity, you know, to talk up his team and speak about how well they're playing and everything else. This one, he's sort of like, you know, yeah, they're playing hard, and I appreciate that. But the fact you know, he himself says you can't take anything from these games going forward, I thought was a bit of a surprising comment from a coach who generally looks on the positive side of things and might blow a little bit of smoke.
Well, yeah, he does blow smoke, Drew, but this is a classic case, right? The coach is being honest, and then you're honest, do you break it down into a point where they doesn't want to be honest anymore?
Sure.
But no, he's being honest here. He's telling you, I mean, I think we believe what he's saying, and I think he believes what he's saying too, and I don't think he always believes what he's saying to the media. Like, I think he's saying it in a certain way that's, it's, as you mentioned, he's trying to deflect attention, things like that. So there isn't much to read into because of the lack of pressure, because of the teams you're playing against sometimes don't have as much to play for, because they don't take you as seriously, because you're not a roster, not just competing for the playoffs, but missing a lot of players, Perreault, Little, all that stuff, right? So I think those comments are fair and reasonable. I don't know if it has anything to do with the fact that there's very little media on this trip and his guards is down. I don't think so. He's not. He's pretty sharp. So I would expect just, he's saying, okay, end of the season, I can kind of let it out a bit more.
Sure.
Yeah, I have no problem with Paul Maurice's comments. They're a little bit surprising, Drew. I think he's trying to curb his enthusiasm, right? I mean, the Jets finally win three games in a row, but it's in game 81 of the season. So as a coach, you're not going to go in front of the media and start, you know, patting yourself on the back like Barry Horowitz because you've won three games in a row, right?
Great reference.
I mean, it's... The way the Jets have finished the season, you know, taking the Chicago Blackhawks to overtime, defeating the Minnesota Wild, defeating the Anaheim Ducks, defeating the San Jose Sharks, I think is positive. And I know that there are a lot of Jets fans. Trust me, I feel your pain that you want a higher draft pick. But I still think that you want to go out swinging. I don't think you want to finish the season just laying down, losing all these games. That's not how hockey teams work. These guys are never going to go out there and not try to win. It just doesn't work like that. That's why Toronto beat Philadelphia the other night, Drew.
Sure.
I mean, Toronto, you would go into that game, you'd say, Philadelphia's battling for a playoff spot. They're playing Toronto? That's an easy game. Nope. Mm-hmm. That's not how it works. Toronto played spoiler, and now Philadelphia has to basically win to get in, right? Yeah. They have the extra game in hand, but
yeah. And we'll go over all the playoff standings and the scenarios a little bit later on in the program. Quickly, before we head to break, any thoughts? We finally saw Brandon Tanev play a couple games coming into the lineup. Any thoughts on his game? Just, you know, another sort of bottom line option for the Winnipeg Jets.
I haven't watched him closely enough, Drew. You can see that he can skate. That's one thing. He gets in quick on the forecheck and such. But, you know, he's chasing a little bit on the penalty kill there. I have to watch him more closely. It doesn't seem like it's...
Hard to watch him on TV.
Doesn't seem like some kind of crazy talent that's going to turn this team around. But we'll see.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look back at our over-under predictions from the start of the season and from the halfway point. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
You know, Drew, I would tell you to check yourself before you wreck yourself, but I'm pretty sure that with these over-under predictions, I wreck myself.
Well, we will break down our over-under prediction. We did this twice in the course of the season. Anybody can make predictions. It's easy to make predictions. It's much harder to go back review the predictions and throw one another under the bus.
Anybody can take a reservation. It's whether you can hold the reservation.
Exactly. So we're going to, you know, like I said, anybody can take this and, you know, make predictions. Nobody remembers. We're going to recap our predictions to see how well we did.
All right.
Of course, we first start with Richie. This is back from January 30th show.
Richie, Will Drew still be on the show? Wrong.
Richie laid down the gauntlet. This back from January 30th.
Are you writing these down, by the way?
No. I'll go back and I'll listen to the audio of the show.
Right, Drew. Yeah, for sure you will.
Yeah. Since thanks, Richie.
Drew, you know what? You know what? We can put on the board.
If we're not writing these down, Richie, why are we keeping track of this?
Well, first of all, two things. Ezzy brought a present for Drew's baby. We haven't mentioned that on air.
I was going to mention that next segment.
Okay, well, you mentioned it now. And then as in return to us, you're going to give us a gift. And you're going to go back on both over-under segments at the beginning of the season and now. Okay. And you're going to get grades.
What was the over-under on me getting Aaron a present?
I thought it was like 4%.
So that was back in January 30th, that program we did there during the All-Star break, where Richie threw down the gauntlet and challenged me to go back and review our over-under predictions.
I mean, I'm not going to say we always hold each other accountable for the regular season and playoff predictions.
Sure.
I have to say last year, I believe some over-unders went unscrutinized.
They may have gone unscrutinized. So this year, we are going to scrutinize accordingly for about the next 10 minutes or so. The first question I asked back at the beginning of the year on October 10th was, the Jets will have over or under 10.5 players score in double digits this year. Ezra, you went with over. You said that they would have 11 players score in double digits. Richie, you said they'd go under. The result, of course, is so far 7 Winnipeg Jets players have scored have scored less than double digits in goals. So that's 1 point for Richard.
Are you keeping track now of that, too?
Yeah, I got everything.
I don't think I did well in this one, though.
I got everything.
Rory, can we maybe get some like game show music to go along with this?
At the end, we can do a little recap.
I think this would, you know, the Drew Trebek over here.
Last time we had that Jeopardy music, it was on too long.
The next question we had was, will Blake Wheeler have over or under 41.5 assists this year? You know, 41.5. Ezzy, you said under, he'd have 35 to 40. Richie, you said under as well. Needless to say, you were both very wrong on that question.
Incredible.
I'm expecting to get every single one of these wrong, by the way.
Not quite every single one of them.
This is like grade 12 chemistry again.
Yeah. The next question was, over or under Brian Little scoring 24.5 goals this year? Ezzy, you had over. You said he'd have close to 30.
Yeah, but he's been injured.
I know he's been injured.
That one doesn't count, Drew.
I don't know, Drew.
That one doesn't count. If a guy misses 25 games.
I mean, it's like arguing Gretzky and Lemieux. I mean,
they still count.
Brian Little has 17 goals in 57 games. Yeah. If he's healthy, he might get to 25.
He may have. Needless to say, you're both wrong on there. But, Richie, you did have the caveat that he'd have over if he was healthy. So, I mean, you get sort of half marks for that.
Well, yeah. Take it into account, the fact that he could be injured.
You could put that caveat in for any one of these things.
That's true.
You could say, well, if Mark Scheifele was... Well, obviously, if he misses 40 games, he's not going to hit any of these totals.
Sure.
Come on, Drew.
I'm going to skip the next one. We'll come back to it. The next question
Hold on. Why? Why are we...
Hold on.
Scheifele at 49?
Well, hang on. So then we went with Jacob Trouba. He will average over or under 18 minutes and 45 seconds of even strength ice time per game this season. Ezzy, you said over. You thought he'd have 20 minutes.
I was right about that one.
No, you weren't.
Oh.
Richie, you said he'd have under. You were correct. He is averaging exactly 18 minutes of even strength ice time per game this season. So another point for you, Richie. You're right now, you're running away with this contest.
Well, Ezzy hasn't got any questions right. I'm only 2 out of 5 or 6.
You are 2 out of 5 right now. So, you know, running away with a bit of an asterisk.
You know what's really shocking about this is that I watch every single one of the Jets games, and I'm getting all of these wrong.
Now you're getting them wrong. You thought your prediction was correct, but it's still wrong. Toby Enstrom will score over or under 29.5 points this season. Well, you both went over with that, and you were both very wrong with that.
Yeah, he's had a horrible year.
He has 16 points on the year.
16 points, that's crazy.
Yeah. Ezzy, you thought he'd have 40, so, you know, slightly wrong.
Well, Enstrom's had 55 points before. 60 points, I think, even. So, there we go.
There you go.
Attaboy, Rory.
Yeah. Next question had to do with former Winnipeg Jets player Andrew Ladd. The question was, Andrew Ladd will have over or under 0.71 points per game this season. You both thought he'd have over. He's under that total. He's at 0.60 points per game this year, keeping in mind both his Jets numbers and his Blackhawks numbers. Andrew Kopp.
Drew's getting lots of pleasure out of this, you can tell.
I'm getting a little bit of pleasure out of it, it's true. Andrew Kopp is wearing number 9. That was the and Andrew Kopp will score over or under 25.5 points in his rookie year. You both had under. You are both correct. He has 12 points on the season. Congratulations, Ezzy. You're on the board.
Good for me.
Yeah, you're
on
the board.
I got one correct answer out of 15.
Alex Burmistrov, he was the topic of the next question. Burmistrov will score over or under 34.5 points in his return to the Winnipeg Jets this season. Ezzy, you said over, he'd have 40 points. Richie, you said under, you thought he'd have closer to 34 points. He has under, he has 20 points in his return to the Winnipeg Jets this season. So, struggles for Alex Burmistrov based on our initial preseason or early season projections. For the Jets to make the playoffs this season, the goalies will have to have a 5-on-5 save percentage of over or under 923. Ezzy, you said under at 918. Rich, you said over. The Jets' save percentage is under right now. It's at 921, 5-on-5. So technically, Ezzy, you are correct there, but they didn't make the playoffs in any event. So I guess quasi-points there. Tyler Myers. 921
even strength?
What's that?
Say that again.
That the even strength, the Jets' 5-on-5 even strength save percentage would have to be over or under 923 to make the playoffs.
Right.
And the answer is 921. That is where their 5-on-5 even strength save percentage is. And as he said it would be under, you said it would be over that.
Did it need to be over it, or what was the question? I'm just confused. Are you saying what it needed to be over to make the playoffs?
I'm looking at the question now. It's a bit confusing.
Yeah, because if it was need to be over that to make the playoffs, then I would be right.
That technically you would be right. So it's sort of, you both get half points there. It was a bad question. It was poorly worded.
It's like nowadays all the kids, everybody gets an A. Ezzy and I both got an A there.
These were all terrible questions.
Tyler Myers will have over or under 44.5 points for the Jets this season. You both said he would have over that mark. He has 27 points on the year.
I'm just wondering, we did this at the beginning of the season. Were we drinking the Kool-Aid? Like, I thought all of these guys would be over, and they're all under.
Well, it's easier if you say over. When, half of them usually over, half of them under.
Sure. Dustin Byfuglien will play over or under 58.5 games for the Winnipeg Jets. You both said over. He certainly has played more than 58.5
games. All right, there we go,
the Winnipeg
Drew.
Jets.
Hey, now we're back on the board.
You are back on the board. So I'd say at this point in time, the score really is for Richie.
By the way, Richie, is this a real segment?
Yeah, I know, seriously.
It's 5 points for Richie. 5 out of 13 for Rich, and Ezzy's got 3 so far. So about 25% there, Ez.
Nice.
But the best part of this segment has been the music that Rory's playing in the background.
Well, you're going to enjoy the segment a lot more after this next question. The question was, in his first year with the Jets, Mark Scheifele had 34 points. Mm-hmm. In his second year, Mark Scheifele had 49 points.
Mm-hmm.
Over or under Mark Scheifele scoring 55.5 points this season?
In his first year with the Jets, Mark Scheifele had 34 points. In his second year, Mark Scheifele had 49 points.
Why are we playing this?
Over or under Mark Scheifele scoring 55.5 points this season?
That's a tough one, Drew. I'm going to say over again. I think Scheifele is going to get 60 points this year.
An exactly correct prediction there, Ezra.
Wow. So all of these wrong answers I made up for that with the correct Scheifele
Karnak points. Over there.
As long as he doesn't get any points in the game tonight against the Kings,
is
you
it
are
true
exactly
is,
right.
You know,
60
it,
points.
Is it true that you called Toronto and said, reverse the kick-in goal because I don't want to be wrong about my over-under prediction on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show in October?
No, in all honesty, though, I felt very strongly about that one because Scheifele took a step forward last year, and he's really taken a step forward this year. So I felt very strongly that Scheifele was going to have a better year than he did last year.
Yeah. So if you look at the predictions from the October 10th beginning of the season show, Rich, you were the better of the two competitors, getting 6 to Ezzy's 4.
The thing is, Richie, we didn't really need this over-under to prove that you were the best of the three of us on the show. So
no,
I don't really know why we
had pretty terrible. I mean, yours were worse, but mine were terrible.
And then we did this again in January. I mean, not going to go through all of them just the same, but in January, during the All-Star break, there was an actual role reversal where, Ezzy, you got 6 correct, and Rich, you got 4 correct.
There you go.
So at the end of the year,
we're even,
you're tied at 10-10.
Does somebody get a trophy? Like, are we doing something here?
Would you like me to, I can hear, would you like a Timbit?
I bought those Timbits.
Well, I'm offering them back to you now as a trophy for your accomplishments.
It's like an old school. Enjoy, Drew. Back the bread maker that he got him for his engagement present.
Exactly right. Anyway, so there's a little look back at some of our preseason and midseason predictions.
Thank God that segment's over.
Yeah, hopefully we can have the playoff preview show, which will be on Tuesday.
That's correct.
Hopefully we can go over like meaningful predictions of teams making the playoffs, who will win the cup.
Things of that nature. Yes. Sure. That'll be exactly a good point there. Good segue in that Tuesday is our playoff preview show. The playoff matchups will be set either later today or tomorrow, depending on if the last two games are meaningful or not.
Yep.
So you can join us Tuesday at 6 p.m. for an NHL playoff preview show, the season finale of NHL this week.
By the way, I'm just bugging you. I mean, this is fun stuff to go over. And the thing is, we're willing to admit when we're wrong. And in my case, I was extremely wrong. And I have no problem admitting that. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm just the looks of the show, right?
Yeah,
I'm not the brains. No. Richie's the brains. I'm the looks.
That's true. You are the looks. That's a very fair assessment. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look at the playoff situation in both the Eastern and Western Conference. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Curve crew are back. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number one here with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg with you. This segment is brought to you by Bell Acres Golf and Country Club and Clear Lake Golf Course. Become a member of Bell Acres Golf and Country Club, and you'll receive the same playing privileges at Clear Lake Golf Course, located in beautiful Riding Mountain National Park. Find out more at bellacres.com and follow them on Twitter at Bell Acres. Gentlemen, we are into the final 2 days of the 2015-16 regular season. All 30 teams will be in action today. The season was supposed to end today. Of course, they have two games tomorrow to make up for some postponed weather-related games earlier in the year. It's amazing that here we are on the last Saturday of the season, and really things in the Eastern Conference in particular are very much still up for grabs, mm-hmm. and a lot of playoff positioning shuffling is still to be determined.
Both conferences.
Both conferences, certainly. But, I mean, the Western Conference, you know the eight teams.
Yeah, and you know the four possibilities.
That's right. You know the four possibilities and everything else. In the Eastern Conference, it is much more wide open. The Philadelphia Flyers are currently just outside the playoffs, as they have 92 points. The Boston Bruins are in the second wild card spot with 93 points, and the Detroit Red Wings are in third place in the Atlantic Division with 93 points. The Flyers have those two games in hand, the Flyers have one game in hand, two games to play today, and then tomorrow evening, where they will travel. They'll play at home against the New York Islanders.
Right, makeup game.
It's
makeup
not much
game.
Travel.
Yeah. Not much travel there at all. So it is a wild, it's going to be an interesting day.
That game may mean nothing for the Islanders, depending on what happens with the Islanders and the Rangers today.
That's right. The Islanders and the Rangers are battling for third and the first wild card spot in the Metropolitan Division. If the Islanders, the Islanders win, they have two games left. So if the Islanders win today, they will be...
If the Islanders and Rangers both win, then the Islanders...
will have to play.
We'll have something to play for.
That's right, because they lose out on the tiebreaker.
If they want to finish third, which is a whole different story.
Well, do you want to play the Pittsburgh Penguins?
Nobody wants to play the Pittsburgh Penguins right now.
Not the way they're playing. I mean, 9-1 in their last 10. They are, it's going to be remarkably unfair, actually, to the Florida Panthers, in that the Florida Panthers are going to have won the Atlantic Division, mm-hmm. and they're going to be playing likely against a 100-point team in the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah, but you know what? The Florida Panthers are a good team, and I think Gerard Gallant easily gets a nomination for the Jack Adams Award. I think he's done an excellent job there. I don't think, I look at the Florida Panthers, and Rich saw them a couple times. We were down in Florida. We saw the Jets play them. This is a good team, well-coached. Roberto Luongo is having a Vezina-like season. Sure. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you've got Aaron Ekblad, one of the best young defensemen in the game, really good up the middle. Yarmer Yager, the ageless wonder, having another great year. I mean, I look at it the opposite. I don't think you want to play Florida.
Well, you may not, and you look at the two teams, like the Florida's going to face. So Pittsburgh's facing the Islanders or the Rangers, and then Florida's facing the Islanders or the Rangers. So that's how it's going to be. Right
Islanders
now.
Have Anders Lee is injured. Well, Anders Lee's out. Travis Hamonic is injured.
And then Rangers looks like a report in the New York
Post
today.
Goaltending issues for the Islanders.
McDonough's out for the first round. Yep. So both of those teams who you probably didn't want to necessarily face, the Islanders or the Rangers, home crowd, the New York pressure, all that, I mean, is that faded away a bit based upon the fact that they're losing two of their top defensemen, both teams,
sure.
or one each.
Hamonic skated this morning,
yeah.
so it sounds like he might be close to sort of returning. Obviously not going to return before the this weekend.
Right.
So it is possible that you might see him, if not for game one of the playoffs, you'd think maybe game two if he was on the ice and then had a decent skate today for at the Islanders' practice facility.
I don't think there's any doubt that you want to avoid Pittsburgh if you're one of these teams, but this is goes back to the whole talk about the Jets. You don't play to lose.
Sure.
So they're playing to win. Now you can put in players that you don't want to win.
Mm-hmm.
You could rest guys. But the Rangers say they played Detroit, so desperate to win.
Sure.
The Rangers really aren't desperate to win. And then you have the Islanders who are playing Buffalo, but Buffalo's in the second half of a back-to-back, and they have another game tomorrow, the Islanders do. So the Islanders would be the favorite to finish third, and the Rangers would play Florida.
Yeah.
That'd actually be that'd be a bit of a godsend for Florida because the interest down south with all the New Yorkers there before they come back for the summer, that would make it a very exciting series.
I'm trying to recall. I think that the last time the Panthers made the playoffs when they won the old...
We had the Devils.
It was the Devils, yeah. Sorry, it was the Devils in the first round.
Lost
in game seven overtime.
3 years ago.
Yeah, that's right. The Red Wings, like you said, they play the Rangers today, this afternoon. Mm-hmm. If they win, they're in. Win in regulation, and they're into the playoffs. It's pretty straightforward for them. The Bruins...
Well, it's straightforward in terms of they make the playoffs.
Yeah. Not necessarily who their opponent
That's
would be.
Right, yeah.
That would be a little bit up in the air because they can jump anywhere from the wild card spot all the
it's
way.
Tampa or Washington.
Yeah, it's Tampa Bay or Washington. That's exactly right.
Which would be a rematch of last year's first round playoff
against Tampa Bay.
Yes,
it would be. That would be that's correct. And then the Bruins, they need to. They're playing at home today against Ottawa. They have the easiest of the matchups. Quote
they
unquote.
Do. They do.
In that, in who they play. And the Flyers have the Penguins today, and then they would have the Islanders tomorrow. Both playoff teams. So the only team really that's not playing a playoff team are the Boston Bruins at home against the Senators. You would think that they should be able to take care of business in that manner.
Keep in mind here
that
if the Flyers win both games, they're in.
That's right. Because
the game in hand. And if everybody wins, Boston's out.
That's right. Boston needs help. Boston needs a win. Mm-hmm. And then either the Red Wings to lose to the Rangers, the Red Wings to win in a shootout,
mm-hmm.
or the Flyers to lose to the Penguins.
By the way, you mentioned the three games, Drew. If you're a hockey fan, this afternoon is like the Super Bowl because you've got Ottawa, Boston
mm-hmm.
first,
mm-hmm.
and then you've actually got the Detroit Rangers game at the same time coming up before noon, and then you've got Pittsburgh-Philly at 2. So you've got all three teams that are fighting for the Eastern Conference playoff spots playing this afternoon.
Yeah.
Plus, then you mentioned Philly plays again tomorrow night. So it's unbelievable. And then you throw in the Masters, I mean it's an unbelievable time. You got the Blue Jays starting up, so it's unbelievable time of year right now for sports fans.
Do you want to go over, Drew, the tie breaking procedures here because it's conceivable on the NHL standings? Because it's conceivable here that Boston, if Boston wins and Detroit wins in a shootout, they would be tied in terms of regulation and overtime wins.
Right. And then I have to look it up, or I have to find it here real quick. There's so much information in front of my eyes there.
Then it would come down to
head-to-head matchup at that point time, which is why Boston doesn't have the tiebreaker in this instance.
And I can go through it quickly. The greater number of points earned in games between the tied clubs,
mm-hmm.
the two clubs are tied, and have not played an equal number of home games against each other, points earned in the first game played in the city that had the extra game shall not be included, so the later game is included.
Sure.
If more than two clubs are tied, the higher percentage of available points earned in games among the clubs and not including any odd games shall be used in determining the standings. And then the next tiebreaker, if those are all tied, is the greater differential between goals for and goals against.
When do they just flip a coin? I mean, they got to be, they're not that far off at that point in time from just flipping a coin.
Richie, you're going to need like a little kind of like tiebreaker guide beside you on the couch while you're watching these games. It's going to be fantastic. And I realize that a lot of people out there have not liked the parity in the NHL. But I think when it comes down to this situation where you have three teams going into the second last day of the season that are battling for a playoff spot. I think it's awesome. And one really good team is going to miss the playoffs.
Yeah. One team is of those teams is definitely going to make the playoffs, miss the playoffs. If you're Washington and Pittsburgh, if you're Florida and Tampa, you know, you're home free. You don't have to worry about anything at this point in time. You're just sitting back today. Yeah. Your games are completely meaningless.
Yes.
You know, you've taken care of your business. So good on those teams. Just a matter of sort of waiting to see who your matchups are going to be and doing a little bit of scoreboard watching.
Well, the playoffs start Wednesday, so I mean, I would be resting guys if I'm those teams.
Sure. If you look back, you know, a year ago to the Jets' final home game, the final regular season game was against Calgary.
Yeah.
They had clinched already. That game against Calgary, I don't think there were pretty much any regulars in that lineup that day. It was a home game on a Saturday afternoon or something, I think. And so the Jets were able to take care of business. You get as much rest as possible prior to the start of the playoffs.
Well, and to Richie's point, Drew, a simple way of looking at it, you know, going into these games as a fan, is if Detroit wins in regulation or overtime, they get in.
Yeah.
And then if all teams win and Philly has the game in hand, then Boston will not get in. That's a more simplified way of looking
Boston
at it.
Boston needs help. I mean, that's really what it boils down to. Boston needs help. They have the easiest matchup, you know, in terms of the actual game played. You know, or, you know, their one game is easier than the other teams.
Well, and Ottawa doesn't have Dion Phaneuf. They don't have Clark MacArthur. I mean, they don't have some of their top players. As Richie said, they're probably going to rest a few guys that have bumps and bruises, right? So
would not surprise me, though, the way Boston's been struggling the last, you know, 2 weeks of the season, 3-6-1. You know, it is a must-win situation on home ice, and that necessarily hasn't been, you know, a lot of these games have been must-win, and they haven't been able to take care of business. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in the Eastern Conference. You look at the Western Conference, as we mentioned, all eight teams are known. The Stars and the Blues, they each play tonight to determine who gets the first in the Central Division and who gets the Blackhawks in the first round.
Just first place and first and second in both divisions are up for grabs. The rest is set.
That's right. The Ducks have the two games to play, though. The Ducks play in Colorado and then potentially could have to fly, or they'll have to fly regardless to Washington. It's yet to be determined, though, if the game is going to matter.
Right.
So I think what you're going to see, I imagine that the Ducks game will finish before the Kings game will. And I think you'll see the players in Anaheim because the Ducks play in Colorado. Mm-hmm. So that game will start before the Kings-Jets game does. And if the Kings win, I suspect you'll see a lot of the players from the Ducks go back home as opposed to travel all the way to Washington and then send, you know, the quote-unquote black aces to Washington for what would be a meaningless game tomorrow evening.
Drew, I'm starting to get a little bit excited for the playoffs here. I mean, we're getting pretty close here. Two days left, I should say. And it's incredible. Another season comes to an end, and it's the best time of the year.
It certainly is. Ryan McDonagh, you mentioned, of the Rangers, is likely to be out for the entirety of the first round after,
it's a big loss.
Seems like
for the
he
Rangers.
Fractured something in his hand or broke something in his hand, according to Larry Brooks. Mm-hmm. That's a huge loss for the New York Rangers.
Yeah, it's their best defenseman.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's
and you're looking at, if you're looking at playing against the Florida Panthers and you're looking at putting up that matchup against the Barkov line, that's who their top line is.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge place to fill in. And then you look at their back end. Who's taking that spot?
Nobody. I mean,
on the left side. I mean, you know, like, you're going to entrust some of your guys who maybe aren't as now that line. You might not have to be as mobile because Jágr will play a certain style. So, but then you get to the second line, and if Trocheck comes back, is it Yandel who's matching? Like, that's. It's going to be interesting. Now, there are matchup problems the other way as well, but it'll be interesting.
Sure. The New York Islanders, you mentioned they lose Anders Lee. He's out for the rest of the season. He fractured a leg blocking a shot.
Well, you know, that's too bad for them. He's the type of player who's a playoff-type player in that he goes to the front of the net. He's got good hands in front. And that's where there's going to be some dirty goals, and that's a big loss.
Yeah, that is a significant loss. I mean, this is sort of second year in a row that the Islanders have made the playoffs, but have been so beat up entering the playoffs, you don't really expect much out of them.
I mean, if they get Hamonic back and he's fine, then they can withstand the Lee injury more than they can withstand a back-end injury.
Sure, still without Yaroslav Halak in that, so you don't know who they're, you know, they have goaltending questions, but
right.
Goaltending questions plus no Travis Hamonic plus no Anders Lee, you know, means no problem, no chance.
Well, likely not if they're playing, I mean, you never know, right? I mean, you have to be able to defend Tavares and all that. The problem is if you get into a no Hamonic and then you're matching up against Crosby and then Malkin comes back and is very effective,
sure.
Then your second pairing against them is going to have trouble, like big trouble.
Mm-hmm.
problem last year is that they couldn't get the puck out of their own zone. If you watch Game 7, I think they played probably 35 minutes in their own zone, 40 minutes.
That was against the Capitals last year.
That was dominating. So, and the Capitals were a good team last year for sure, but Crosby Malkin's like a different ball game.
Yeah. The Lightning recalled Jonathan Drouin from Syracuse. He scores in his first game back as a member of the Tampa Bay Lightning against the Devils on Thursday night. Are you surprised Drouin's back?
I am, based on the fact that he was released from his... Exactly. Yeah. He was not playing in the AHL, but they need him. And Steven Stamkos is injured right now, and Anton Strahlman is injured right now. It's nice to see Jonathan Drouin score a goal, but without Jonathan Drouin is not Steven Stamkos. So going into the playoffs, I still think they're at a huge disadvantage because they don't have their top goal scorer. But again, good for Jonathan Drouin. We've said this, you know, he's young enough that he can still turn around his career if you want to, you know, say that it needs to be turned around, right? Because this has been a pretty disastrous year. He hasn't played much in the NHL this year, right, Drew?
Sure.
So, you know, good for him. If he's able to have a productive career, I've said that, you know, I think that he still needs to mature as a hockey player, and he's only 20 years old. But, you know, good for him playing on the second line for the Lightning. They need him. They need goals.
The Lightning hope that he rehabilitates his image with a strong playoff performance because, you know, they need to sort of, you know, they want to get as much on the trade for him. So if he plays well in the playoffs, when the spotlight is the brightest, they'll be certainly happy to take that. And then the St. Louis Blues, they are without both David Backes and Jake Allen through the end of the regular season. Not sure their status for the playoffs. They'll be reevaluated. But the number of injuries entering this year's playoffs seems tremendous. Seems more impactful than in past years to me.
Well, that's why I think Ken Hitchcock and the coaching staff deserve so much credit, because this team could finish with the most points in the Western Conference, with all of the man games lost they've had, Rich. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Hitchcock's done an excellent job there. I know his future is somewhat uncertain in St. Louis, but that's another team. I mean, a lot has to do with whether or not they get the goaltending. But that team, with all of the injuries they've had, has been excellent. But again, are they going to be a first-round knockout again like they were last year?
Well,
seems to happen all the time.
Mm-hmm. We'll know by the end of tonight if they get the Chicago Blackhawks in the first round, or if they get the Minnesota Wild. Here, quickly, before we go to break, here are all the playoff opponent possibilities. The Washington Capitals, they can play Philadelphia, Detroit, or Boston. The Florida Panthers, they can play the Islanders or the Rangers. The Pittsburgh Penguins, they can play the Islanders or the Rangers. The Islanders can play Florida or Pittsburgh. The Rangers can play Florida or Pittsburgh. The Tampa Bay Lightning can play Detroit or Boston. Boston can either miss the playoffs, play Tampa Bay, or play Washington. Philly can either miss the playoffs or play Washington. Detroit can either miss the playoffs, play Tampa Bay, or play Washington. Going to the Western Conference, the Dallas Stars either play Minnesota or they play the Blackhawks. The St. Louis Blues, they either play Minnesota or they play the Blackhawks. The Blackhawks either play Dallas or St. Louis. The Kings either play Nashville or San Jose. The Ducks either play Nashville or San Jose. The Sharks either play the Ducks or the Kings. The Predators either play Anaheim or the Kings. And finally, the Minnesota Wild either play the Dallas Stars or the St. Louis Blues.
Huge differences there, by the way. I mean, you talk about the differences, and like throughout all of that, the biggest difference to me is Wild or Blackhawks.
Sure.
That's the biggest difference.
I can't argue with that point. It seems to me that in the West is more wide open than the East. I mean, I think I know that which four teams are going to be the final four teams in the East.
I don't know about the I would say this, Drew. I don't know about the Atlantic Division. I would say on the Metropolitan, you're expecting to be Crosby Ovechkin second round.
You would expect Crosby Ovechkin second round, certainly.
But the other division you feel as confident in? Toss up there, I think, no?
I can see the Panthers losing potentially to the Rangers, but I don't think they would lose to the Islanders.
Okay.
And so
they play the Rangers, which it is right now, and Tampa plays Detroit.
Yeah. I guess, you know, you're not wrong. I mean,
it's going to be an upset somewhere, isn't there?
You would think so. I mean, you would think there usually is at least one, but it'll be fantastic. Reminder, Tuesday, our playoff preview show, 6 p.m. here on TSN 1290. Let's head to break. When we come back, we discuss creativity and playmaking in the game. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve, the Illegal Curve.
Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Ten minutes before the top of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com. Coming up at 11 o'clock this morning, we're going to do an end-of-season Winnipeg Jets roundtable with both Scott Billick and Jeff Hamilton. Both of those fine gentlemen are going to join us in studio. So the final hour of the show today dedicated to looking back at the 2015-16 Winnipeg Jets season. Still to come in the second hour, we're going to be joined by Jim Matheson of the Edmonton Journal.
Yes.
To talk about the closing of Northlands Coliseum. And then
I like how you still call it Northlands.
Well, you know what?
It is weird calling it Rexall Place. I mean, I know it's Rexall Place. Now it's done, so it doesn't matter, but
if Rexall wants to cut me a check, I'll mention
it. Well, no, I mean, you're supposed to, you have to call it by what it is, Drew.
I know, but it's Northlands Coliseum.
But it was weird just in terms of the names, like referring to it, all the history at Rexall, because the history didn't take place when it was called Rexall.
Well, the history, if they want to talk about the history at Rexall Place, they should just burn it to the ground.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the history that should be talked about at Rexall Place. The history was at Northlands Coliseum. And then at 10:30 this morning, Los Angeles Kings insider John Rosen going to join us to talk about the Kings, the Jets, of course, final regular season matchup coming up later this evening on TSN 1290.
The Chosen Rosen.
I think that was probably a road trip that Jets fans planned early in the season. There was always that risk that it would be not meaningful.
Yeah.
And it happened to be that way.
Unfortunately. Yeah. But yeah.
But you still have a pretty good time if you're in California.
Yeah, if you're in California, it's still not a bad time. Although, I got to say, the NHL scheduling, the fact that they send him to Anaheim.
You're still mad about this?
Not mad about it.
I mean, it's because of the snowstorm, Drew.
What's that?
Oh, you're talking about
Anaheim,
San Jose, LA.
Anaheim, San Jose, LA. Why not go San Jose, Anaheim, LA?
There's other games. Granted, LA played Anaheim on Thursday, but yeah. But
Drew's doing a lot of kvetching today.
Yeah, just a lot of kvetching. But
more than just today.
But, I mean, Drew, it's an hour flight up and it's an hour flight back.
I know.
So they play Tuesday. They fly after the game.
Yeah, it's not a big deal.
Well,
don't
they
get
have
me
to
wrong.
Fly into Oakland because of the late night rules on the San Jose airport, whatever it may be.
Is that true?
Yeah, apparently. Brian Munns was talking about that on the broadcast the other night. But even so you come in, you have the day in San. I mean,
it's not the biggest hardship in the history of the world.
Yeah, and they're not flying
on a private jet
right
now.
Yeah, they're not flying, coach.
In an article in the New York Times this week, Wayne Gretzky lamented the lack of creativity, the lack of playmaking in the game of hockey.
He didn't write the article.
He didn't write the article, but he spoke to the author of the article about the Lucas Aykroyd. We were wondering if that's Dan Aykroyd's son. We have no idea or not. But
are you Howie Mandel's son?
I'm not. That's we both spell and pronounce our last names differently. Maybe I am, actually. That would be, fingers crossed. Quote, this is Wayne Gretzky to the New York Times. Quote, when I was 10 years old, they throw a puck on the ice and say, go score. Now at 10 years old, the kids are taught to play in their lanes. Defensemen stay back. Everybody blocks shots. I mean, my goodness, I don't think I ever blocked a shot, and I killed penalties every single game. I thought goaltenders were paid to block shots, not forwards. It's changed completely. I think the biggest thing we've lost is a little bit of our creativity and imagination in general.
I have to say, and I totally agree. I seem to always agree with Wayne Gretzky, but I think one of the problems here is it's back to results. I think results...
Yeah, can we throw it to Ezzy now that he put a donut in his mouth?
Put a Timbit. Didn't take a bite of it. Just threw the whole Timbit right in his mouth. And he's taking a bite.
Can't I eat a Timbit while you talk? I mean,
what if I wanted to throw it to you? Jokes aside, I think when you talk about... it's results, right? So it's the idea that you have to win. And to win, you have to play a certain way. I'm talking about young players here. Mm-hmm. You have to play a certain way. And the pressure... I think there's also the pressure on young coaches, too. Or, I mean, parent coaches, whatever it may be, to win. For the other parents and things like that. And when there's pressure to win, then you can kind of relate that to the NHL. When there's pressure to win, it's easier to teach a certain way. Like, we'll talk about the Adam Oates article later in the show, but it's easier to teach defense.
Sure.
And when it's easier to teach defense and teamwork and all that stuff, You're going to do that if that leads to the short-term results, which is winning, right? And if you think about coaching at a minor league level, which is what Wayne Gretzky's talking about, a lot of times when you're coaching for a year. You don't know. It's not like you sign for a long term. So you're coaching for a year. You want to coach the next year, or you want to be able to get another job. No, seriously, and you're volunteering. But think about it. But you want, and so if your team, if the players all improve, and you happen to finish, now you could say, oh, if they improve, you should play better. But say they improve skill-wise, but the results aren't there. It's probably going to be deemed a failure by most parents if they're not looking at the big picture. And therefore, then you're saying, okay, you're not gonna be back. You want to be back. And you see that kind of cycle that it is? I think that plays a part in it for sure.
Well, then I think I don't disagree with you, but I think really what you're saying is that at a very young age, too many people are concerned with wins and losses not skill development.
Hockey Canada specifically has looked at that and encouraged coaches, Richie, to spend more time in practices, working on those skills. It's probably not on par with the Russian system or the Swedish
Well, the Russian system, it's not easy because they practice four times more than the Canadian kids do.
Exactly. And I think that there are too many games. And I think Canada is still producing a lot of skilled players. But you look at the draft this year, the top pick's going to be an American. The next two picks are probably going to be from Finland. Not to say that Canada isn't still going to be a top hockey nation. But back to the article, Richie. I mean, you mentioned that you agree with Wayne Gretzky, greatest hockey player of all time. And he's still a student of the game, which I think is really interesting. You mentioned the Adam Oates article in the Players Tribune. And this article in the New York Times, I thought it was also really interesting that he mentions that Glenn Sather tried to mirror the Edmonton Oilers off of the WHA Winnipeg Jets. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really interesting. Yeah. You know, a nice shout-out to the Winnipeg Jets. Anders Hedberg, Ulf Nielsen.
Those teams played with skill and creativity.
Bobby Hull,
The likes of which nobody saw at that era.
Right.
They were revolutionary.
That's right.
And if you look at the good teams, Rich.
I've watched all those old games. They're fun.
And if you look at the teams now, the elite teams in the NHL, Chicago, Washington, Dallas, those are the teams that encourage and let the skill flourish. And those are the coaches that kind of employ the kind of quick strike offense. And I think, you know, you mentioned the coaching. I think it's easy to kind of coach a defensive style.
It is. It's the easiest way to do it.
And that breeds mediocrity.
And, you know,
right?
Mediocrity. You try to make plays in the neutral zone. You turn the puck over, you're benched. I mean, it goes to the NHL level as well.
Sure.
I mean, Nikolaj Ehlers tries some crazy plays in the neutral zone. Do you live with the crazy plays and say two out of six times he's going to screw it up? And say, okay, but there's going to be such a positive from the other four times? Or do you say those two times are negative?
That's where coaching comes in, right? Because a coach such as Pascal Vincent or Charlie Huddy or Paul Maurice, they have to say, okay, you got to pick your spots, right?
But if Paul Maurice is a coach who is on his way out, which he's not, if he's on his way out, and he's worried about his job, he wants to win that game. And he's going to say, cut that out. Because over the long term, maybe that helps me, but I might not be here over the long term.
Sure.
So too bad.
Yeah, it is a delicate
balance. I think that goes all the way down to lower levels. I really do.
And that's a significant problem too. I mean, it's one thing at the NHL level. It's another thing at a minor league level where you're just talking about volunteer coaches.
And talking about winning. And it's, you know, if you lose four games in a row, or then what's the problem?
Sure.
Whereas maybe there is. But this, where's the development? And the other thing is, you know, I mean, you have outdoor, because I've coached, but you have outdoor ice times for the kids. And those have become outdoor ice times have become times where, you know, you want to have another organized practice. I'm of the opinion that the outdoor ice times that the teams get should be just for scrimmaging and kind of screwing around, because I think you get great skill development in that as well, and the creativity aspect of it. So, you know, practice is good, but you also want to have a little bit of play, but play as a team. If that makes any sense. So, I mean, I think there's ways to do it, but as you talk about this, I could go on and on about this topic, but if you talk about the skill level of Canadian young players, I don't disagree with you, but I think there's becoming a huge gap. At the top, you have all these skill specialists and development. As a whole, is the game moving that way, or are you becoming so elitist within the game? Sure. Never mind hockey being elitist because of how expensive it is. Within hockey players, there's a certain portion of them who go to camps all year and do this. And they can do all that. Do they think the game well enough? And sure, you'll have 5, 10, 20 guys who get drafted, but what about the rest?
At the end of the day, Gretzky thought the game better than anybody, and that's what made him the best player of all time.
And his point, and the point that he makes, I think, and the point that Adam Oates makes is he probably, there's some of that was born into him, and some of that he learned.
Just by throwing a puck on the ice and say, go play. Something we will continue monitoring this. I'm sure this isn't the last time we're going to have this conversation. Let's head to break. When we return, Jim Matheson joins us to talk about the closing of the Northlands Coliseum in Edmonton. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the program Jim Matheson. Jim covers the Edmonton Oilers and Edmonton sports for the Edmonton Journal. Jim, appreciate your time this morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Jim, we obviously brought you on to talk about the closing of Northlands Coliseum as the Oilers played their final game there earlier this week on Wednesday. And, I mean, so much hockey history happened in that building going back to the WHA days and, of course, the legendary 1980s Edmonton Oilers. And before we talk about those memories, your thoughts sort of on the finale and the closing ceremonies that occurred on Wednesday evening. I know that, you know, sitting at home here in Winnipeg watching it, the number of ex-Oilers that were invited to participate in the closing was just a tremendous sort of statement and a tremendous testament to the organization and to the building itself.
Well, yeah, they didn't put any time limits on on players that they would invite. Like, they didn't say you had to play 100 games for the Oilers to get an invite to the final closing, which I thought was a nice touch. They invited World Hockey Association players if they'd played 5 games, 10 games, 100 games, and NHL players as well. And there was lots of players there that I hadn't seen in an awful long time and that didn't really have very long careers with the Oilers, but obviously wearing the Oilers sweater resonated with those players because they wanted to come back and you know, renew acquaintances with players that they probably hadn't seen in, you know, 10, 12, 15 years. And it was a nice touch. Now, there were some players, some people there that I thought might be there but weren't there. Jason Arnott played for the Oilers for a long time, but he didn't come. You know, Randy Gregg lives in Edmonton. He didn't come. So there were some players that didn't come, and I thought Glenn Sather said he was going to come, but this team's still playing in New York, and he didn't come. But he's been there for a banner raising and the 30th reunion of the Oilers the last couple of years, so perhaps he didn't see the need to come. But one last, you know, night to close the building, and you're right, there's lots of memories in this building and more Stanley Cups in this building, Rexall Place, than pretty much every other building in Canada, for sure.
Jim, for those of us who have never been to Northlands Coliseum/Rexall Place, myself included, what made this arena so special and so unique, aside from all of the Stanley Cups and all of the great players that played there?
I don't know. The only thing that made it unique in the early days was the ice. It was the best ice in the National Hockey League for a long, long time. The current Oilers, or current NHL ice maker, Dan Craig, used to be the ice maker in Edmonton, which is sure why the ice was so good. That was the Oilers' ace in a hole. They had a fast skating team that was even faster on the ice they played on, because the Oilers played on it 40 times a year and the other teams would only play on it a couple. So the ice made it special. I don't know if anything else really made it special. The team winning made it special more than anything. It was an iconic building because, you know, in the glory days, the Oilers were on TV all the time and people got to know that this is where they played. Now, I don't, you know, it had bells and whistles back in the 70s when it first was constructed, and it was, you know, a really, really nice building in the World Hockey Association, and was much nicer than some of the buildings in the National Hockey League. So that made it special. But, you know, like, it's not like the Chicago Stadium or the Boston Garden, where the ice surface was way smaller, and that, you know, that made it different. The ice surface was the same in Edmonton as anywhere else, but the ice surface itself, you know, made it special, I think. And every player who played for the Oilers in the early days commented that the ice was so good compared to any other rink in the NHL.
Jim, you had a good story earlier this week in the Edmonton Journal about the fact that, you know, the arena actually played a part in Wayne Gretzky selecting Edmonton over Winnipeg when given the option of where to go.
That is true, and it's too bad Winnipeg didn't have a 15,000-seat rink. When Nelson Scalbania, who had signed Gretzky in the World Hockey Association in 1978, thinking this was going to be the end-all and be-all in Indianapolis, and the people there took one look at the teenager Wayne Gretzky and decided they weren't going to pour out to watch him play. He decided he would sell and or trade Gretzky to another WHA team, and Edmonton and Winnipeg were the two teams that Nelson zeroed in on, and he gave Gretzky the choice. And Wayne, being 17 years old, decided he'd talk to Gus Bedali, his then agent. Mike Barnett became his agent later, but then it was Gus Bedali, and Gus said, well, the Oilers have a new building that seats 17,000, and Winnipeg has one that seats 11,000. I think Winnipeg's building was a little bigger than 11,000, as I recall, being from Winnipeg, but he thought that Edmonton would have a better chance to get in the NHL because they had a nicer building. So Gretzky said, okay, Edmonton it is. So that's why he went to Edmonton, and unfortunately Winnipeg lost out.
Yeah, it was. Imagine if, exactly. We're joined by Jim Matheson on the program from the Edmonton Journal, talking about the closing of Northland's Coliseum/Rexall Place. At one time, it was called the Edmonton Coliseum. Had a number of different names over the years, of course. Jim, you know, obviously the final cup was in 1990. The sort of the unexpected cup, and then in 2006 they got so close, losing to the Carolina Hurricanes. You know, you were there for obviously both cup runs, and you were there for the earlier cup runs. You know, what was, you know, how did the arena change? How was the atmosphere different between, say, the 1990 cup-winning team and, say, the 2006 team in Edmonton that fell just short?
Well, the fathers were at the 1990 one, and the kids were at the 2006 one, I think. It was a different generation, I think. The 2006 Stanley Cup came out of nowhere, and there was tons and tons of kids in the building that didn't know anything about 1990. That was, you know, 16 years earlier, and a lot of these kids were 18, 20, 22 years old, and they had no idea of the 1990, the last cup win. So the atmosphere in the building was almost louder than it was in the glory days, and maybe it's because the fans at Edmonton got to expect the fact that the Oilers were always going to be in the Stanley Cup final. And while it was loud then, it was even louder in 2006, and it was born out of the unexpected run to the cup final, I think, and the entire city seemed to be in the building at the time. You know, all 800,000 people seemed to be in the building, and you know, the Paul Loriot, the late anthem singer, decided he was going to, you know, stick his mic in the air and let the fans sing the anthem, portions of the anthem, rather than him, and that became something different. And they also had one of those decibel meters to see how loud it was in the building, and you know, the fans took it upon themselves every game to see if they could get it louder and louder and louder. So it was different, I guess, to admit it was different. And the press box in Edmonton, I failed to mention that it's unique in that it goes all the way around the building. And there's only two in the NHL like that, Montreal and Edmonton. So the press box, when I first went up in the 70s, swayed a little bit when it was loud, and then I got used to it. And then in 2006, when it got so loud in there, you could feel that the press box was kind of rocking and swaying a bit too. So that made it a little different. Unfortunately, the Oilers didn't win the Stanley Cup, but and it was the last playoff game, June 17th, 2006, that the Oilers have had. But for that two-month run, it was lots of fun.
Jim, you had a really good article in Tuesday's Edmonton Journal that we all really enjoyed, going over your memories of Northlands Coliseum. And there was one particular part the entire article was good, but one particular part that I really like you talking about, sitting down with Wayne Gretzky after the games and how you were able to talk to him for longer than just 1 or 2 minutes, and how kind of Glenn Sather and the Edmonton Oilers kind of created that family culture and that kind of laid-back atmosphere. Do you think that's kind of missing in some modern-day NHL arenas?
Absolutely. It's become too... I think the teams and the PR staffs around the NHL have become so protective of the players. Mm-hmm. That they just don't let the media people just sit down with them for 5 minutes and talk about all sorts of stuff. And what do you think about this? And what have you been doing? And then, okay, then we'll have an interview. Now everything is scripted. It, you know, a player comes out and all the media people interview the player at one time, and that's all you get. And you get them for a couple of minutes, and then they say, that's enough, bye. And I know things have changed and that there was far less media back in the 80s. There wasn't TSN hanging around in Sportsnet, and there was just one writer from the Edmonton Journal, one writer from the Edmonton Sun, and the radio play-by-play guy, Rod Phillips, and then we were out all the time, and then at home it was much the same. So you got to sit down with a Gretzky or a Messier and wander into the dressing room on a practice day, and they had a TV room in there with couches and coffee pot, and we just wander in, have a coffee, sit down, and if an injured player came in, he'd sit and talk to us for 5-10 minutes about how our things were going, and we found out some stuff, and then you went back and watched the practice. But things have really changed, and not to sound like, a grouchy old man, I liked it better before, when it was a little more relaxed, and now everything, like I said, it's like the media, they have to put up with the media people because we're around, but the team scripts everything, and if you request a player and the team says, well, he's not talking today, that would never have happened before. There was never a day when you would request Wayne Gretzky and say, he's not talking today, or Mark Messier or whatever, and those players, I have to say, were a little bit better than some of the players today. And yet the players today who couldn't carry their equipment bags are saying, I'm not talking. Okay, good, fine. Why would anybody want to talk to you anyway?
It's true.
And like I said, I mean, it sound like a grouchy old man who just turned 67, but I liked it better before.
It was Jim's birthday earlier this week, so belated happy birthday. Jim, when we hear, and you've kind of alluded to it a bit during the interview, but when Rexall closed up on Thursday, what was it like for you personally? I mean, you are very much, over the course of the last 30-some years, even more than that, kind of the messenger, the fan, somebody who the fans rely on and trust to provide information about the Oilers. What was it like for you to maybe close up the laptop for the last time at that building and walk out?
It was a little bittersweet, but I the building's got kind of stale, and it's kind of like a hotel that it's been there for 50 years, and they changed the rooms of the hotel to fix them up and stuff, but in the lobby a bit, but it's still kind of dated and stale. Mm-hmm. So it was a little, bittersweet in that I've spent, I added it up, I think I spent 10 calendar years, in that building for practices and games and such like that. So, and you used to go to the same place all the time, and your car knows how to get there, and you don't even have to steer it. There's certain tinges of regret, but, I live downtown in Edmonton now, and the new building is going to be a little closer to where I work than where I live than the current building is. So that's a good thing for me. And the players you saw in the building a lot of them came back, so you got to see them again, and the fans got to see them. So it was a nice final thing. It would have been nice if the Oilers had a team that would have stood up to the memories of the building. But the current team is 29th of 30th, and while they won the final game, they're out of the playoffs again. And it would have been nice to at least make a playoff run and maybe get into the playoffs the final year in Rexall Place and give the fans, at least another couple of weeks of playoff hockey. But that didn't happen.
We should mention, finally, before we let you go, Jim's from Winnipeg, as he mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. and his father, of course, very well known and regarded,
yes.
in Winnipeg, Jack Matheson.
Yep.
The guests we're having, Jim, we're having a roundtable of the Jets season in the final hour of the show. And one of our guests actually won your dad's award,
yep.
In 2015. So thought we'd point that out to you.
Well, that's good. And my, my sister's boy, Keith McCullough, has won the award
sure.
several times.
Yep. That's right.
Yeah.
Yep, we know Keith. Yep.
Yep. That's great.
Jim Matheson covers the Edmonton Oilers for the Edmonton Journal. He joined us to talk about the closing of Northlands Coliseum, Rexall Place. Jim, really appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for doing this.
Okay, take care, guys.
Take care, Jim.
Thanks so much, Jim.
Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Can't touch this. Can't touch this.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
U18 head coach has been relieved of his duties and has been replaced by the U17 head coach, and it looks like at least the majority of the Russian roster will be swapped out for the 99 birth years, the U17s, and it looks like Meltonium is the reason for that.
That was Slava Malamud appearing on Leafs Lunch with Andy Petrillo on her sister station, TSN 1050, a significant doping scandal involving the Russian under 18 team. They will no longer compete, or I guess they will compete still in the under 18 tournament that's taking place in Grand Forks later on this month. But instead of it being the under 18 team, it will be the under 17 team heading to North Dakota, because the entire under 18 team tested positive for Meldonium, a performance enhancing substance banned by the World Anti-Doping Agency as of January 1st. Should I be surprised? I mean, are you surprised any time now when you hear of sort of doping suspensions in international hockey? Or is this, nothing that's really too surprising to you?
You always want to believe these people, people aren't doing it. So yeah, there's always a bit of surprise to me. If you listen to, Slava Malamud's whole interview with Rick Ruff earlier this week, it's the perspective that is so interesting, in that he talks about in Russia, the perspective is, if this gets out, how did it get out? Why didn't we protect our players better and all that? And here, how did this happen? And this
sure.
perspective is so different. Sometimes when you are looking at international violations as opposed to NHL violations, this perspective to me is intriguing. I mean,
it's not scandalous that it's occurring. It's scandalous that it became public.
Yeah, it seems like it. I mean, again,
well,
this is not just hockey right now, right? This
sure.
this drug.
This is Maria Sharapova tested positive for the same drug. The Russian men's curling team suspected to have tested positive for the same drug, and the Russian national volleyball team suspected of taking the same drug.
It looks like this drug is prevalent amongst Russian athletes. Before Maria Sharapova tested positive, Drew, I'll be honest, I'd never heard of Meldonium.
Mm-hmm.
And Richie mentions that doping exists in sport at all levels, both professional and amateur, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it is a scandal. I mean, the fact that there are 16 and 17-year-old kids, well, most of them here are 17 years old, testing positive for a performance-enhancing drug, should concern a lot of people. We should mention, too, that this drug only became a banned substance recently. Mm-hmm. I think it was as recent as a couple of months ago.
January 1st of 2016.
So 3 months ago, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, I guess it was one of those drugs where they knew that it wasn't on the banned list. Mm-hmm. But now that it's on the banned list, maybe it's been staying in athlete systems for a little longer. I don't know if they've taken it recently. You know, again, I'm not a toxicologist, but I mean, it's a big scandal. The World Under 18s, by the way, mm-hmm. you know, hopefully we're going to be able to drive down to Grand Forks and check a few games out. This is a tournament that's been dominated by the Americans. And one of the reasons for that is because a lot of the junior players are still in the playoffs, WHL, OHL, QMJHL. And Russia's a team that's actually struggled quite a bit at the World Under-18s. This isn't the Ivan Hlinka. That's in the summer.
Sure.
This mm-hmm. is the World Under-18s coming up in Grand Forks. Canada's won, I believe, 4 gold medals. And the Russians have actually put more emphasis on this tournament. And it's a big scandal there. For us, we look at it and we say, okay, you know, Meldonium, whatever. But and you got to keep in mind, too, that, Drew, in Russia, the skill level and the amount of players that have high-quality draft picks has fallen off in recent years.
Mm-hmm.
And Russia has struggled at the Olympics. Mm-hmm. They've done well at the World Hockey Championships and the World Juniors to varying degrees. But they've kind of fallen a little bit behind countries like the U.S., like Finland, like Sweden, in terms of developing players, because we know Russia's always produced good hockey players. So this is a big scandal there, and you never want to hear about this. I mean, the fact that they're taking something that it doesn't, again, I don't know a lot about it, but it can't be good for you. Sure. I think it was originally supposed to be used for vets.
Well, if you read what, and it's not like this was just sort of a one-off case. Apparently this has been prescribed mm-hmm. to these players mm-hmm. for going on 2 years. So this was a systemic, you know, part of a day-to-day maintenance that they gave this Meldonium to under 18 players or players on the under 18 team. Apparently, it's been going back, you know, in 2 years, as Slava Malamud reports,
right.
that some of them, when they were still the age of 14, you know, that they were, the quote is, the Russian Hockey Federation admits it had prescribed Meldonium to national team players for, quote, for protection of the heart muscle, end quote. I mean, it's amazing that this is still going on in Russian sports. I mean, this is like, you know, 1970s East Germany sort of stuff that was going on, you know, when they were, their entire teams were testing positive at the Olympics mm-hmm. for these performance-enhancing drugs. You know, the impact you think this is going to have on any draft-eligible Russian players? Because they certainly have a number of talented players that were expected to go first round, you know, second round, things of that nature. Do you think this will dock them some spots in the upcoming NHL draft?
Tough to say. I mean, there's some articles about it this week that it probably won't. But, I mean, that's team perspective. And then you get into, well, are you concerned about it? If you are concerned about it, does that mean another team perceives there to be value? It really depends. It's hard to say, Drew, if collectively 30 teams are all going to be affected by it. Because I don't ever think, I mean, maybe it affects some draft slots, but I don't think you're talking multiple rounds being affected.
Sure.
There's too many guys here. Like, how much does it affect the players' play?
How much do you blame the players? Do you blame the players at all, or do you just say that they were, you know?
Well, I mean, you have to have responsibility for your actions, but we are talking about minors here.
14-year-olds, yeah, to some extent, so, going back that many years.
I don't know. It's tough to say. It's tough to say because the details are still pretty murky.
Sure. But it, you know, Ed, how about you? Do you blame the players at all for, you know, just sort of taking what's given to them?
Well, it looks like they were all taking it, right? So it looks like this was something that the coaches were recommending, the training staff, and maybe even higher up than that.
Well, according to Slava Malamud, he plays the blame right at Vladislav Tretiak, who is, I think, the Russian minister of sport or something along those lines.
I believe, well, also Fedosov is
Fedosov
involved
is
there.
Heavily involved there, too, yeah. Slava Fedosov. That's right, that it goes, you know, that if, you know, something of this nature would have to, isn't just the coaching staff, you know, coming up and making this decision, that it has to have been made with, you know, the authority of a real high-level individual within the Russian Ministry of Sport.
Right, and again, this was something that wasn't banned 6 months ago. So I'm sure there are a lot of substances that people take, athletes take, that aren't banned.
That's always the way it is. They're always chasing, right?
They're always ahead of the game, right?
Right.
So, but it looks like they got caught red-handed is really what looks like is happening.
Yeah, I mean, it really is sort of it's a throwback to the sort of the olden days of the, you know, the Russian menace, where you see, you know, that they would do anything necessary to, you know, have an advantage and to, you know, gain an advantage over their competition. So you don't expect to sort of see this kind of thing in 2016 anymore, yet you see it right here with Meldonium and the under-18 Russian team being replaced.
Right. And as far as the Russian-eligible draft prospects. I don't necessarily know that this is going to impact whether they're drafted or not. I mean, if scouts and teams like a player, I think they're going to pick him if they think he's going to be a productive NHL player. I don't think that necessarily this scandal is going to affect it too much. That's my own personal belief, but I think if anything, Drew, what affects it here is a lot of the scouts, amateur scouts of NHL teams, were hoping to look at and view some of these players at the World Under-18s. They're not going to get that chance now.
Well, as we go to break, here's the quote from Buffalo Sabres general manager Tim Murray. Quote, "It definitely hurts their draft ranking, them being the draft-eligible Russian players, from my standpoint. I've only seen Rubtsov once. He's a highly ranked player, top 20 projected pick. And other players I've seen zero times. My scouts have seen them, but a late positive viewing goes a long way. It's human nature." So in Tim Murray's mind, the Buffalo Sabres GM,
right,
this will hurt the draft's right ranking.
Well, he
knows
a lot more than I do, but I mean, at the end of the day, if you like a player and you think he's skilled, you'll take him.
Yeah, I'm not sure if he knows any more. I mean, he knows more about those players, but his perspective is not going to be the perspective of all 30 GMs.
Certainly not.
In my opinion. And to be honest, it might be a misread. You don't know how much it affects. You don't know if this is helping their, you know, whatever it helps can't be. You can't improve on that by different training methods, and you're just as good. Sure. So that may be correct. That may be an error. But I do think it's a different perspective, Drew, when you're dealing with children who are under 18. They're children as opposed to adults like Maria Sharapova.
Yeah, who was 20-something years old. Let's head to break. When we come back, John Rosen, the LA Kings insider, joins us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.